Welcome to Orchestrated Relationships, a podcast studying relational value. I'm David Homan, your host. Years ago, I formed a community of people called connectors, people who have an innate ability to build and maintain authentic relationships across their personal and professional lives, and who thrive on making connections. The community was formed out of a need to develop a system and a methodology to help relational value be valued. And the most effective way I've found so far is to champion somebody else, which is why I have in front of me my close friend, Milton Speed. Welcome.
Thank you, David.
Milton, you've done a lot in your life, even given your ripe young age, being part of TED Talks, the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, working with the Epic Foundation. Now you have your own impact advisory, working with some incredible human beings, leveraging their impact for the world. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the impact of one of those projects and what we can do to help?
David, thank you for the community that you've been building over the years. Thank you for your own commitment to authenticity and for uplifting others. I really feel honored to be your friend and grateful to have this opportunity to share my story. You asked which one of the projects that I'm passionate about, that I'm working on, that I want to share with the world. And honestly, it's not any of the projects that has to do with Full Impact Advisory. It's a project that is extremely close to home because it's part of the community that I grew up in. I was born and raised in Portland, Jamaica. I lived in a district called Islington. For those who are familiar with Great Britain, that name will resonate, but for the rest of the world, that won't. The project is the Islington District Association is building a community center. And the reason why it's near and dear to my heart is because for over 40 years, that community center has been, they've had the idea and the infrastructure, but hasn't really taken off. And my mother, who retired from her work, went back to Jamaica in 2015 and has been tirelessly fundraising and being creative in order to build this center.
So this center was something that nearly 40 years ago people realized needed to be?
Yes.
And it has yet to be.
Exactly. And at that time, the same issues prevailed. Lack of access to quality space where children can feel safe, as well as a space for them to learn, and then a space for adults to convene in the afternoons. And then for community members to meet. And my mom has been, as I said, being extremely creative. They do work days where she provides food and, as she says, a little bit of spice for the workers. Her word for spice is alcohol, since she doesn't drink, but she always brings spice to the work days. And that's one of the ways that she's been able to get the center up in a place right now where it's functional, but there's still a lot of need for it.
I think that's amazing to hear about, especially because the only thing that changes society is community. There's nothing people can do on their own. And I've seen myself firsthand bringing together youth, bringing together all generations in a way that really helps you elevate and have common dialogue is just so crucial. So for you, what can we do to help? What are the greatest needs? What does the community need? Where should there be an international focus on this? And you know, how can I help personally help this part of your home become more established?
No, I really appreciate it. And one of my biggest goal in life, and I think one of my driving forces why I get involved in impact and when I work with the people that I work with, is to further the level of access that people can have. And I think education is one of those access points that really helps to unlock someone's potential, but also helps to increase the community. So the areas where I always ask for support is, one, just to share the word. If you come across people and they ask you, you know, what's something interesting that you've heard about that that really sparked your imagination, is, you know, this little tiny building in Portland, Jamaica, that is going to help hopefully transform the community. So that's one. The second is, as you're thinking through making contributions to causes that are, you know, that are impactful. You know, they're still fundraising right now. They're fundraising to put windows and doors in, and as well as toilets. And then the third thing is, once a year, I have an aunt who does a book drive, and she's really passionate about reading. And we don't have a library close to where I live. So if there are books, school supplies, anything of that nature, towards the summer or close to the school year, if anyone has any of those materials, I'm happy to collect them and send them back.
I mean, it breaks my heart that we think of a need for philanthropy for what for many people, most people in America, is simply a necessity and something we take for granted. There are communities in the U.S. that don't have libraries, but the majority of them have access. There are, throughout this country, working toilets almost everywhere. And what you highlighted was essentials in order to bring community together and give them those basic values so that they can join together and support each other.
Yeah, you're right. We do take a lot of the basics for granted. And there are countless people around the world who don't have those simple things that, we wake up in the morning and we have that, and we go throughout our day and we don't think about. But those, I grew up in very similar circumstances, and it's part of my foundation. It's one of the things that helps me to continue to stay humble. But I also know when you do have access to those basic needs, it's transformative.
Absolutely. So I want to just switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about an experience in my life that really changed how I look at relationships and viewing the world. And I know that one that also has both perfected the way that you build relationship, but also haunts you. So I was somebody in high school who didn't feel like I fit into any community. I wasn't part of the cool crowd, the theater crowd, the music crowd, the jock crowd. I was a soccer player. I was an actor. I was friends with everyone, but I never felt like I fully belonged. And I always wanted for a long time to feel like whatever community I was part of, they were always looking out for me, until I realized that that was never going to be the type of community that I had. I had to initiate 95% of the conversations about where people are and what they're doing. I had to hold my own events because I wasn't necessarily invited to everything I wanted. And it took me a while to realize that it wasn't because, and my wife will say I'm not cool, but I wanted to be cool. It wasn't that I wasn't athletic enough or good enough in order to make the soccer team or make the baseball team. It was that I hadn't yet defined for myself how I wanted to be seen by others. And to this day, I constantly work on the balance of how I come across and what I need versus how people see me and what they need from me. So when you think about your life growing up in these high school years, what comes to mind in terms of where you excelled, where you fit in, and how that's formed who you are today?
Well, I want to start off by saying, David, I do think you're cool. Any person that's able to convene the types of people that you've been able to convene, do the things that you've been able to do, that's cool to me. I also really love that you're a soccer player. Growing up, I was very athletic, and I think that's the thing that most people held on to when they meet me is that, oh, you're really fast. My last name is Speed. I thank my dad for that. I had a lot to live up to.
Yeah. I mean, not as fast as Bolt, but speed is pretty good.
Honestly, at one point in my life, I was almost as fast as Usain Bolt. For those who are listening that knows what it means to run a 4.240, I was running around 4.2, 4.23, 4.25.
Wow.
I ran a 100-meter dash in under 11 seconds.
So what you're saying is, because actually we're starting this podcast, although no one will know this outside of this room, a little bit late. When you said you were 10 minutes away, you were actually 27 minutes away, but you were just so quick. You made it here.
Yeah, that's why I'm sweating right now. I ran so I could not be more later than I already am. But
we're here to now. So yeah. People thought that you were incredibly fast, and yeah. They thought that was your attribute.
That was my attribute. But
you were really good at running.
Yeah, I was really good at running. I was really good at soccer, and everyone that I met knew me in that context. They knew me as an athlete. But no one paid attention to the fact that I was taking honors courses. I was one of the top people in my class when I got to university. My freshman year at a 3.8, but everyone focused on the fact that I was an athlete. And it wasn't until 2018 when I got an email from my university, and they said, we would like to honor you for your achievements after college, and we want to name you the Alumni of the Year. And my initial reaction was, I thought the only award I would ever receive from my university was for my athletic abilities. And they really wanted to stress that, no, you've accomplished so much more outside of sports, and we want to recognize you for that. And that threw me for a loop, because I think it was the first time in a very long time, actually forever, that I was recognized for something more than being an athlete. And being a black man, and someone that grew up in Jamaica, where we're known for our athletic feats and for our the way that we entertain, and not enough has been stressed about how our intellect, it really was moving for me to be seen that way, because I believe I try to convey a level of intellectual curiosity in everything that I do, and just being curious in general. So similar to you, I try extremely hard to remind people that I meet that I'm more than an athlete. I do have good ideas to contribute, and my work proves it. I think that's the thing for me.
And how does that translate when you meet people and your first impression might not necessarily be as deep as that person then eventually comes out to be for you?
Can you state that question?
Sure. So when I meet people, I will often, as everyone does, formulate an opinion within the first 5 minutes about who they are, what they are to me, mm-hmm. and if at possible, what value I can bring.
Yeah.
When people surprise you, they often take a while to come out of their shell to tell you the things that they wouldn't necessarily think characterize them the best, but actually do.
Yeah, and the thing of it is, being in New York and this time that we're living in, there's so many people that are holding back. For example, the other day I was at the Brooklyn Museum for Saturdays, and I met this wonderful person, and I asked her, you know, like what's your name? And she's like, well, hold on a second, what does this all mean? And I was like, well, why do you hesitate? She's like, I'm really careful about how I answer that question because I want to protect my brand. And she's like, well, what do you mean by that? She's like, well, in New York, you're asked, where do you work? Where do you live? Where do you go to school? And in answering those three questions, someone paints a picture of you. And my reaction to her was like, well, why don't you just answer the question truthfully and authentically? And she's like, well, you know, it takes me a while to actually show people who I really am. And I think that's one of the things that I try to do immediately is to demystify anything, not to hold back, but be as authentic as I am in every situation. And in doing that, create space for others to be authentic and go a little bit deeper than the surface, who I am, what do I do, where do I live, where did I go to school, and start asking questions about what are you passionate about, what do you care about, like what drives you, like what was the coolest thing that you did yesterday, what was something that you've read that really made you sit and pause. So I think, you know, in building deep relationships, it's important to get to the heart of who that person is, not what they do
Totally agree. What I also try to do with each of those, because I ask those questions as well, is figure out if they have an idea of the best banh mi in New York, the best burger, the best ramen, because I love New York for its food as well.
Yes.
And it's a way to also set the tone that community comes together because of things we share that we enjoy.
Yeah.
And that the personal, the private, the business, all of this, it's not about a composite of how we think somebody should act or mm-hmm. should be. It's really much more of a reflection of what value we can give to them. And when they are valued by that, what they do in return.
Absolutely. So speaking of which, what's your favorite pizza spot?
To be honest, I'm not sure I want to say because it's always packed, but there's an incredible restaurant called Tapo, which is on 24th and 6th, which for me is the absolute, absolute best thin crust pizza I've ever found.
All right.
And no one knows about it except for the ones that know.
And now everyone will.
Now everyone will.
All right. Well, I'll throw mine out there. So maybe there's a balance. Speedy's.
Not because Speedy's. No pun intended with you being Milton Speed.
Yeah, but Speedy Romeo's is one of my favorites.
Also a great one.
Yeah.
Basically anything that isn't directly near Times Square. So I live my life by quotes. It's how I like to end each of these podcasts. I'm going to tell you one of mine in its context. This one's always personal because when people ask what it was like to be fathered by somebody that was an esteemed Shakespearean scholar, I say Elizabethan English was how I was parented.
Hmm.
So, one of Shakespeare's most famous quotes, "All the world's a stage and the men and women merely players."
Wow.
I think about this in terms of the context of how much of our fate, how much of our destiny, how much of our drive and intention we can control if we are actually in a world where our lines have already been given to us, our roles have already been assigned, and our humanity defined by our gender, our zip code, our upbringing, our school, and the opinions we form en masse about how people that look different than us must be different as opposed to where they are the same. And so I live my life as somebody who is always curious to see if this world is a stage, then what actually was the composite in Shakespeare's time? Because all of the men and women were men on his stage.
That's powerful.
And we live in a world now where it is becoming more and more socially acceptable to have your gender consciousness challenged and celebrated for not being what we conform to as just men or women.
Mm-hmm.
But Lady Macbeth was played by a man. Desdemona was played by a man. So what we know and we think are the boundaries that set us from the greatest playwright ever to grace the stage in itself is a conundrum, because what we think we see nowadays with Shakespeare is not actually what we saw at the time. And if it's not actually what we saw at the time, then what is the truth for the roles we are assigned versus the roles we accept? So that's just my context in terms of how I live my life and how I look at each stage as an opportunity to find somebody new to shine with it. Tell me about yours.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think when I hear that and I reflect on it, it reminds me of all the roles that we believe are important for us to play and what's informed all of those roles. So thank you for sharing that with me. Mine is a quote that I actually found while I was looking for a quote from my high school yearbook. And it reads, "Seek not to follow in the footsteps of men of old. Seek what they sought." And this is a Japanese poet from the 1600s named Matsu Bashu. And it really struck me because I did not have the certain roadmaps that many of my peers had in terms of men of old that have accomplished so much. My grandfather on my dad's side passed away when my dad was 7, so I didn't know what the men of old in my family were like. I did not have a relationship with my mother's father. In my community, there weren't that many men of old that did anything outside of the community. But when I moved to the States, that list of men of old that were able to accomplish great things became even more clearer to me from the books I was reading, from the stories that were being told of these great titans, the Carnegies, the Fords. And what I wanted was their type of success. But I think as I got older, I'm realizing that their success was not always predicated on financial gain. A lot of it was also them trying to figure out who they are and trying to find love of themselves and find love of of other people on the planet, but they went about it their own way. So I want to seek what they sought in terms of, you know, getting closer to myself, getting closer to others, and getting closer to the planet. But I want to do it my way. And I love Natalie, our good friend, who wrote Leapfrog, and the stories that she shared of people who, you know, find unique ways to accomplish great things. And I'm not saying that I'm one of them, but I want to pursue life in a way that's unique and authentic to me.
It's beautiful, and I'll just end with the thought that may we live in a world where 500 to 600 years from now, those men of old are men of color, and those women of old are just as revered as how history has been defined for years by a specific gender and a specific color. Because when the world comes together in a way to share that collective value and that compassion for that path and journey, that's where you build community. It's where you build community centers. And it's where you end up bringing people together to celebrate how their differences actually are just a starting point of a conversation. So Milton, thank you so much for being here today on the podcast Orchestrated Relationships. It's been such a pleasure to have you. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it, brother.
On my next podcast, stay tuned for the amazing Katie Hunt Moore of Virgin Unite, who discusses her desires to bring people together by amplifying their impact through matching their desires and skills. We'll close this podcast with an excerpt from my work, Variations on a Box, Movement 2, for 4 amplified cellos. Thank you for listening to Orchestrated Relationships, recorded proudly at Smash Studios, edited by Stephen Bartlett. Stay tuned for our next episode.